today I want to deal with a couple of questions. They're the same question, just slightly different in phrasing. First one is, why is life so difficult? Why is life so hard? I want to try answering this in multiple ways, but the first way I'd like to answer this question is, we row against the tide instead of rowing with it. I had an experience when I was in the Army in Panama. I was leading an expedition of Special Forces soldiers when I was a first lieutenant, as well as some Panamanian National Guard, the Guardia Nacional. That was the military force in Panama. We were doing a survival exercise, moving from the Atlantic coast to the Pacific coast by going over the Continental Divide. The name of the game was to see how little equipment or food or supplies we needed in order to do this. We were essentially retracing some of the steps that Balboa would have taken when he was traveling in that part of the world hundreds of years ago. So part of the trip, once we got over the Continental Divide, was to walk for a couple of days, and then we ended up in a little towny, little village on a river, a big river, and we're talking rural here. People were riding horses, wearing six-shooters on their hips, kind of like an old western town, just very river-oriented. So we got a resupply by helicopter of rubber boats, RB-15s, that would hold 10, 12 men, big men, and all of our equipment, and we were going to row to the Pacific coast. We thought it would take us a day or so to do that. So here we are, big guys, strong guys, in three RB-15s, and we start rowing. And after about an hour, we recognized, somebody pointed it out as I knew, I could see it, is that no matter how hard we were rowing, we weren't actually moving. We were rowing and staying in the same place. The reason was, is because the tide was coming in. And the tide was coming in at such a pace that no matter how hard we rowed, we couldn't go against the tide. We couldn't make any progress. So what we did is we pulled over to a riverbank, stood on the riverbank for a while, and then tied up to a tree. And this is what we did, is I was about to tie up to the root of the tree, and somebody said to me, "Sir, you're tying up the root of the tree. If the tide comes in, that is going to be way underwater, and we're going to have a hard time untying it." Good point. So we tied to a high branch in the tree. I didn't realize this at the time, but because I lived on the Atlantic side of Panama, the rise and fall of the tide on Panama basically was 3 to 4 to 5 feet. So low tide was, that was the difference between a high tide and a low tide, 3 to 4 to 5 feet. This part of Panama on the Pacific side was, the difference between high tide and low tide was between 19 and 21 feet. Later on, I would see houses built on stilts along the river, and I went, aha, I got it, I understand. But at that point, we didn't understand it. So we tied up in the tree and slept in the boats, and then when the tide changed, we untied and started to row with the tide going out. So now the water in the river is starting to move out toward the Pacific Ocean. We were rowing so fast, we were moving so fast, not that we were doing much rowing at that point, we were moving so fast with the tide, with the stream going out toward the Pacific, that if we had somebody on water skis behind us, these rowboats, we could have towed somebody. That's how quickly we were moving. When we were rowing against the tide, not making any progress, but expending a lot of effort. When we were rowing with the tide, we were zooming. You know, one of the ideas that a lot of people have heard, we've heard about trade winds. And when this was first discovered, 15th century, by the Portuguese, it was this idea that there were natural currents in the ocean. Natural currents, natural winds that would take people from point A to point B. And if you knew what they were, you could just align your boat, your sails with it, and use them to travel. Now, trade sounds to us like commerce and exchanging energy, but in fact, originally it meant path or track. So if you can see where this stream of energy is moving, in this case wind, you can use it to your own advantage. I think one of the troubles that most of us make is we don't look to see which way the stream is going, which way the natural energies are flowing, and consequently we make up our minds that we want to go upstream when it would be so much easier to go downstream. That's how life becomes difficult. A second point seems obvious to me is that we refuse to open our eyes because we already know what needs to be seen. We've seen the book by its cover, and that we don't need to know any more information, and that is that. We close our minds because we think we have enough information, we're aware of enough, end of story. But if you look back over life and you look back over history, you can recognize we're always growing in knowledge. We're always growing. As more information is available to us, we grow our awareness. It's only about 500 years ago, 600 years ago, that we realized that the Earth is not the center of the universe. The sun doesn't revolve around the Earth. In fact, the Earth revolves around the sun. The world is no longer flat. For centuries, that was thought to be a fact, and people lived their lives according to that erroneous fact. Now, you'd say, how about that? How about that? We're constantly adding energy and adding knowledge, adding information, and so our view of things changes. I heard a quote the other day that says, if we don't love someone, it's because we don't know that someone. What's that mean? Get more information about that person. Get more information. Then, all of a sudden, we would be in a position to have a better appreciation for that person. If we knew more about them, we could relate to them more effectively. I think that if we avoid an activity, it's because we haven't learned enough. We haven't processed enough energy about it. Just think of a good piano player. You think that person has processed a lot of information about playing a piano? I do. How about a carpenter that's skillful? You think that person knows the processes and the tools and the techniques of carpentry better than the average person because they have worked with it and exchanged a lot of energy with those processes and tools? I do. How about a dancer, a Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, or somebody else that you may have seen on TV, like Dancing with the Stars? Do you think they have devoted tremendous energy in order to learn about this? They have gotten more information and become more familiar with dance steps and so on. Sure. Same with a writer, same with a baker, same with pretty much any kind of hobby or career. People that are successful at it, people who find it enjoyable and easy and who want to do more of that have gotten much more energy than the rest of us who struggle and have a difficult time. Back in the 80s, early 80s, I had a personal computer very early in a large company, and people, when they started to hear about these things, wanted it. One of the first things one had to do is to overcome the fear of hurting it. So when people would come to me to learn a little bit about computers, I would sit them down in front of the computer. I would have them feel the case of the computer, right, the box, if you will. They would feel it with their hands. I would have them feel the keyboard, and then I would have them gently slap the computer itself, the box. It didn't hurt you, and it didn't hurt them. It was okay. You're not going to be able to damage this thing. Doing what you normally do, it's okay. So it's not going to bite you, and you're not going to bite it. So people started to do that, and now all of a sudden they realize this is not really a ticking bomb. I have enough information about it now. My relationship with it has started to develop. I can exchange energy with the computer and the keyboard and the monitor and the printer. I get it. Back then, external disk drives, right? Floppies and so on. I get it. And it was all of that exchanging energy. Being open, open our eyes to this, open our ears, open up our minds to it, and then we can become more effective, and then things become easier. A third point is that we think thinking is the way to live life well. And that thinking, in our culture, we're told about that thinking. Think. My wife is a retired IBM executive. One of the key words in IBM culture back in the day, and it may still be today, is think. Well, Bruce Lipton says that 5% of our lives are governed by our conscious thinking, and 95% of our lives are governed by the subconscious. I did this calculation the other day. Rob Williams, who is a guy that is an associate of Bruce Lipton and a developer of Psych-K, says that the conscious mind processes 4,000 bits of information per second, and the subconscious mind processes 4 billion bits of information. 4,000 versus 4 billion. So I took out my handy-dandy calculator, and I did a little bit of division. I wanted to see what percentage conscious mind power had relative to the processing power of the subconscious. Here it is, 0.0001%, that's three zeros and a one, are the conscious mind. 99.4 nines percent is the subconscious mind. You go, oh boy, what does that mean? Very often, it says we're using the wrong tool for the job. This idea, let me exaggerate. If I say, I want to crack an egg in order to make an omelet, and I want to use a hammer, you'd go, whoa, dude, you're overdoing it. That's the wrong tool. Or if I were trying to pull a nail out of a piece of board, and I'm about to use tweezers to do it, you would go, dude, you're underpowered. You're underdoing it. No, that's the wrong tool. I'm thinking that using the conscious mind to create success, or to create health, or to create whatever it is we're trying to create, might be underpowered. It's the wrong tool. Using the conscious mind to get what success is, and then to define it, might be a good idea. This is what I define success as, and then confirming it with the subconscious mind, right, that tremendous repository of information that we've processed over our lifetimes. If those two can get in harmony, I'm thinking that's got to be a great opportunity to go with the wind, to go with the stream, to be able to use those two tools in collaboration. Look at the world. We have more information today than ever before. We have more education today than ever before. You and I are more educated than we were 10, 12, 15, 20, 50 years ago. We have more technology in the hands and homes of more people than ever before. And the world is out of balance more than ever before. Thinking with our heads must not be the answer to the question, how can we make life good for more people? Now, I think that's a very important question. How can we make life good for more people? A lot of people go, I'm not interested in that. I think we're missing a bet if we only narrow it down to think about ourselves. So, instead of just thinking, what if we could use our hearts and our guts to add their two cents to how we can make things better? So we think with our minds, based upon our experiences, use our heart, use our guts, tune into our emotions as guidance systems, then all of a sudden might figure out a better approach. We might be able to make life a little easier. The fourth answer to the question, why is life so difficult, is we think solid things will make us happy. When we're in physical form, you know, it's very easy for our egos to say, hey, I'm going to use the five senses, right, sight, hearing, taste, touch, and so on, to determine what's important. If I can process it through my five senses, clearly it's got to be important. Well, I think maybe our five senses are great for dealing with things that have been physically manifested already, but I don't know that it's a good approach for the process of bringing things into physical manifestation. I go back to that underpowered conscious mind description a minute ago. So to create stuff requires us with making or allowing the unseen to become seen. Now, this is an area that I think can be confusing to a lot of people. They say, whoa, wait a minute. We've got technologies that make the unseen seen. We've got Geiger counters, for example, that can detect radiation, which we cannot see. And, you know, you look at this Geiger counter, you can look at the gauge, that little arm is going up, and there's clicking sound, so it's like sight and sound. Look, we're making the unseen seen. Same with X-rays, same with MRIs, EEGs, EKGs, that sort of thing. Detecting the unseen and making a representation of it is not the same thing as bringing the unseen into physical form. It is not the same thing as solidifying energy. Like the alcoholic or the drug addict who thinks a substance makes them feel better, the person who chases and acquires material possessions believes that these things contain their happiness. That car is a container of my happiness. That drink is a container of my happiness. That jewelry is a container of my happiness. Now, I think it's pretty obvious to most people, including those, that that's why they have to keep adding stuff, because those things don't contain their happiness. If they did, we would be satisfied once we had them. They don't satisfy them, and we aren't satisfied. It's the vibrations we offer or transmit to the objects of our attention that makes us happy or unhappy, not the solid things themselves. Fifth answer to the question why life is so difficult. When we make life only about us, we make it more difficult. I have noticed that the only way that I can have a problem is for me to make that situation exclusively about me. What I want, how I think things should be, what I think other people should do, how they should act, how they shouldn't act, on and on and on. When we think of ourselves exclusively, we no longer offer energy to that which we want to create. We've taken our minds off that, and now we're thinking only of ourselves. We've stopped enlivening that thing that we want to create that either retards the growth of that creation or kills it entirely. The sixth answer of why life is so hard and difficult is that we overlook or deny our spiritual knowing. All but the most damaged people, and there are a lot of them, according to the 6 o'clock news, all but the most damaged people know when they should do something for another person or another thing. When we don't do that something, it triggers a negative vibration. Imagine all of a sudden this fingernail on the blackboard, that chalk, that vibration in our bodies. That is not a good thing. And there will be ramifications to that. According to the book Leadership and Self-Deception, this act of not doing what we know we should do for another is called self-betrayal. Self-betrayal. When we betray our spiritual knowing, we start to break apart. We weaken ourselves, we weaken our resolve, we weaken our bodies. We, on a spiritual, energetic level, we weaken our electromagnetic abilities to attract the positives that we want in our lives. Instead of denying our spiritual knowing and using anger and blame to justify it, we could ask the divine for help. We want help in hearing the voice of this knowing and then taking action based upon what we could do for somebody else to improve their situation. And as we do this, that spiritual knowing is going to be reinforced. It's going to be empowered. It's going to produce the vibrations that we know are happiness and joy and success and ease and comfort as compared to difficulty. Denying ourselves, denying our higher selves and the selves of others, is really what makes life difficult for all of us. Most of us have been trained to believe in a magic bullet, or a magic pill, or a magic spell, or something that is going to make all things better, without much involvement on our part. But we weren't taught that love has that magic ability to heal us and our lives, and we weren't taught that we have the right and the responsibility and the power to choose to offer it to anything and everything we put our attention on. Egos, personalities, and training say, if you see something that looks at all threatening to you, your security, your privacy, your possessions, react this way, like a saber-toothed tiger. Consider them saber-toothed tigers and react like you're a saber-toothed tiger. It doesn't have to be that way. We can choose this higher ground, this higher level of awareness. We can consider the fact that love is the missing ingredient in any life that looks like it's difficult or hard. I would say that anybody who's experiencing life that's difficult or hard is really a red light on a dashboard that says, go to God. If we had that red light on our dashboard in a car, we would go, oh, I got to go to the mechanic. I have to go to the dealership. If we've got a red light going on in our lives, and it's showing up as difficulty, that, to me, is a great indicator. I need to go to God and ask for help. Help me maintain. Help me to grow my awareness so I process energy in a different way and maybe overcome some of these 6 or 7 steps that, up to this point, may have been contributing to make my life difficult. I want life easier, more exciting, more thrilling. Have no problem with challenges, but I don't need it hard, difficult, frustrating, or despairing. Go to God. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 of Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. And so it is. Thank you. Amen.